This is KTOO. I'm Yvonne Cremery. Good afternoon, and thank you for listening. Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium is yet again expanding its reach in Juneau. Earlier this week, the city's Planning Commission approved the Alaska Native-run Healthcare Organization's request to build a new dental clinic in the Mendenhall Valley. The three-story building will be located at Search's medical campus near Safeway. The organization already has a dental clinic in Juneau at its medical campus in Lemon Creek. According to a spokesperson, developers on the project plan to break ground on construction this summer. The organization anticipates the clinic will be open to the public in the fall of 2027. The spokesperson says the new facility is part of Search's effort to meet the growing demand for dental services in the region and is intended to, quote, replace our existing, outdated dental clinic, which no longer adequately meets our needs. Search has rapidly outgrown its services in Juneau and Southeast Alaska in recent years. In the past 2 years, it's acquired Southeast Medical Clinic, Juneau Youth Services, Juneau Obstetrics and Gynecology, and Juneau Physical Therapy, and many other clinics throughout the region. And crews in Ketchikan are still dealing with a rock slide that cut off access to the northern part of the island. The slide came down on Thursday and completely blocked the Tongass Highway just past the airport. It left people who live north of the slide cut off from city services. No injuries were reported from the slide. State geologists and landscape experts flew in to assess the stability of the slide a few days ago. They had their work cut out for them. The slide zone is still shifting and unstable. Alaska Department of Transportation landslide expert Travis Eckhoff described the debris pile as a giant rocky game of Jenga. The part of the Tongass Highway where the slide came down runs directly along the water. Initially, trapped residents were ferried to either side of the slide by a free water taxi service offered by a regional tour company. All schools in the district were closed for 3 days. On Wednesday, crews opened a new two-lane detour. The new bypass is expected to stay open until the slope can be stabilized and the main highway is cleaned up and repaired. Officials say that could take weeks. Southeast Alaska's Chilkat Valley is inching towards the area's first major timber harvest since the 1990s. But that plan just hit a snag. The timber company under contract for the sale recently applied for a permit to store harvested logs in Haines Lutek Inlet. As Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, the state is pausing the application amid public concern.
4 years ago, an Oregon-based timber company won a contract to harvest some 23 million board feet of spruce and hemlock outside Haines. But the company's plan to get that timber out of Alaska and into buyers' hands is sparking pushback. That's because the company's local operator is seeking permits to build a log transfer facility and storage site in Haines Lutek Inlet, a popular spot for commercial and subsistence fishing. Late Wednesday afternoon, the State Department of Natural Resources made an about-face and temporarily closed the public comment period on the permit application, which was originally set to end March 28th.
Just from the public commentary we were getting and stuff like that, we felt like it would be necessary to do this.
Tony Keith is a natural resource manager with the department. He adds that the agency will be requiring the company to provide the public with more information, including a dive survey of the ocean floor.
And then once you're finishing up the log transfer facility, or if you're trying to bring it back under review or anything, you're able to do another dive survey and go down there and just check for like bark accumulation and stuff like that.
The timber sale, known as Baby Brown, has a long and winding history. The state first awarded the sale to a contractor in 2016, but later canceled it after conservation groups appealed the land use plan. The sale was later awarded to Oregon-based NWFP Incorporated. The company has been developing a plan for the sale since then. State Forester Greg Palmieri says it could present a major economic opportunity for the area, which used to be home to a booming timber industry, but hasn't seen a similarly sized sale since the 1970s.
If there's no industry working in the area, there's no potential for growth. So this sale was designed to encourage the development of the industry. Conceptually, does it crack that egg? We'll have to see. It has the potential to do that.
The permit application proposes a log transfer facility and storage area on a 12-acre site about 4 miles out of town, off Lutek Road near the Alaska Marine Lines dock. The facility would include a slide to transfer logs into the water. Log bundles would then be placed into floating rafts and towed to a storage site close to shore. Later, they would be loaded onto a ship. Palmieri, the state forester, estimates the storage site would be less than 1/3 of a mile long, and says the facility is a conservative option that aims to limit potential impacts. Still, locals are worried about the facility affecting the inlet and access to it. Eric Lemke is a commercial fisherman in Haines.
My main concern is during the sockeye run, you know, a lot of times there'll be as many as 20 boats up there trying to fish. And I think if there was a lot of logs and a big ship, it would pretty much make it impossible to do that.
Polly Johansson, who is listed as the permit applicant, did not respond to multiple requests for comment. Earlier this month, a separate lumber company confirmed it is largely shutting down a site near Kodiak. The company attributed the move to China's pause on imports of U.S. logs in response to ongoing trade disputes. Palmieri says he's received no indication that the trade war has impacted the sale. The permit application, for its part, says logging could begin as soon as this spring and run through 2028. The state agency did not say when the dive survey will take place or what the permitting delay will mean for logging operations. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfeld.
And state lawmakers are now more than halfway through their four-month legislative session, and time is ticking away. The Alaska House and Senate are both controlled by bipartisan caucuses made up mostly of Democrats. Coming into the session, the two caucuses looked like they were aligned on many key issues. They each said they wanted to boost education funding, improve the state's retirement system, and of course, pass a balanced budget. But the devil is always in the details, and fractures are starting to show as legislators work toward a final budget. Alaska News Nightly host Casey Grove spoke with Capitol reporter Eric Stone for an update on where things stand in Juneau.
We're coming up at the end of March, and that means the complicated, time-consuming process of writing the budget is well underway. But looming over all of this is the fact that lower oil prices mean that lawmakers are facing deficits. And, you know, unlike the U.S. Congress, the state constitution actually requires the legislature to balance the budget every year. So current estimates for a status quo budget put it hundreds of millions of dollars underwater. So that's basically the same education funding as last year, plus a roughly $1,400 permanent fund dividend. Thing is, though, there is a lot that the majorities want to add. The biggest part of that, of course, is the boost to state education funding that the House passed earlier this month. And how to pay for that is not exactly clear.
Yeah. So how could lawmakers pay for that funding boost and balance the budget?
So there are a few different levers that lawmakers could pull to balance the budget. There are three main ones, I would say. They could raise taxes or, you know, find some other revenue. They could draw from a state savings account, or they could cut the permanent fund dividend to balance the budget. Actually, there is a fourth. They could significantly cut back on state services. But, you know, every single one of those is facing opposition from somewhere. I'll go kind of in reverse order here. Budget cuts are on the table, but, you know, some of the key budgeters say that after years of relative austerity, there isn't a whole lot left to cut. House members are talking about, you know, cutting spending somewhere, maybe some of the governor's increases, but it's unclear, you know, where that will land as I talk to you now. Okay, so next, cutting the PFD, that is never popular. In the last couple of years, it's become something of a tradition to have the quarter of the legislature's annual draw from the permanent fund be set aside for dividends. That is, you know, that sort of results in the $1,400 figure I referenced earlier. Senators have been hesitant to go much lower than that. You know, it's a pretty important part of a lot of people's income. But this week, we did see some softening in a news conference. Some key senators expressed some flexibility on maybe reducing the PFD to about $1,000. They've also floated repeatedly cutting back on that education funding boost the House passed. They're floating cutting back on it by about a third. That gets you a lot of the way there to balancing the budget, but, you know, not quite.
Not quite, but you mentioned two other options, raising revenue or taking the deficit from savings. What about that?
Okay, so those are another two where they're kind of at loggerheads here. You know, Senate President Gary Stevens, he's a Kodiak Republican, he said at the beginning of the session that drawing from savings was off the table. He even chastised the editor of the Juneau Empire for asking him about it repeatedly. Well, so this week, Stevens actually apologized to the editor of the Empire, and he said the Senate was, after all, looking at drawing from savings to cover the portion of the deficit that covers the current year. Here's how he put it.
Times change, things change, and sometimes you have to eat crow up here.
But Senator Lyman Hoffman, he's the Finance Committee co-chair in the Senate, he says he doesn't think senators are interested in drawing from savings for the next year. And that's the real meat of the budget. You know, what happens, you know, from July 1st to June 30th. Hoffman and the rest of the Senate majority have been emphasizing revenue bills as a way to pay for, you know, the things that the House and the Senate want to do. There are three major ones in the Senate right now. They're basically changes to oil taxes and corporate income taxes. But again, you know, there is a catch. The House has a one-vote majority. It's 21-19 over there. And just recently, House Majority Leader Chuck Kopp, he's an Anchorage Republican, and he signed on to an op-ed opposing oil taxes that included most of the minority Republicans in the House. So that means that even if every member of the majority voted for all these taxes, and there's no guarantee that they would, they could not pass without some Republican minority help. Kopp says, you know, for his part, he'd like to balance the budget using some of the other mechanisms we just talked about, like, you know, using savings in the Constitutional Budget Reserve or CBR.
Yes, we have to do a CBR draw. Yes, we have to pay the dividend we can afford. No, we don't have to do it by raising taxes on entities and persons. Not this year.
And that is basically where things stand.
Okay, well, how are they going to resolve this?
Well, you know, that's anybody's guess at this point. There is some special session chatter going around right now. Hoffman, though, the Senate Finance Co-Chair, he says it's unlikely that any extra time would actually result in, you know, some breakthrough.
I've been trying to impress upon my colleagues that the numbers don't change, but if we don't come up with a solution, it can ruin your summers.
Leaders on the House side, for their part, they say nobody's too dug in at this point, and, you know, for that reason, they're optimistic, too. But, of course, we'll have to wait and see.
That was Alaska News Nightly host Casey Grove and Capitol reporter Eric Stone. Scientists at the Alaska Earthquake Center are monitoring several earthquakes near Adak Island. Since last Wednesday evening, there have been at least 8 quakes greater than magnitude 5. Residents in Adak are feeling the shake, but have not reported any injuries or damage. Earthquakes are common in the Aleutian Islands because the region is located where the Pacific Plate is moving under the North American Plate. Scientists classify these quakes as a tectonic swarm, given the number and strength of the earthquakes and their location on a major plate boundary. This marks the second major swarm in the Adak area within months. This one follows a similar pattern to a swarm in December when there were a dozen strong quakes within a few hours. Scientists will continue to monitor the earthquakes and expect that activity from the swarm will persist in the region over the coming weeks. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 54 degrees and pretty sunny with some strong winds this afternoon. The low tonight is about 35. Tomorrow looks nice and sunny too with less wind, east winds around 10 miles an hour, and a low of 31 degrees. And Saturday looks nice as well with a high near 45 degrees. We may get some rain on Saturday night, though Sunday looks like it'll also end up being a bit drier. You're listening to KTOO.